Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Our guest this week is Bonnie Burton. Bonnie is a Los Angeles-based author who writes books and comics about sea monsters, Wookiees, mean girls, crafts, magical things, robots, and aliens. Her books include Live or Die, Survival Hacks, J.K. Rowling's Wizarding World Movie Magic, Amazing Artifacts, Crafting with Feminism, Star Wars Craft Book, Draw Star Wars, The Clone Wars, Girls Against Girls, Pros and Comic Cons, Womanthology, and more. She's on Twitter at Bonnie Girl, and that's B-O-N-N-I-E-G-R-R-L. Hi, Bonnie. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing great.
Yes. Welcome to our little Cool Tools podcast.
Awesome.
So good to have you.
Thanks for inviting me.
I think of all the people we've ever had on Cool Tools, I've known you longer than anybody. I think we met in like, did we meet in like 1988?
Yeah, we met in college.
Yeah.
Which is so long ago, but
so,
yeah.
So long ago, yeah.
Yeah, it was when Boing Boing was a print zine, mm-hmm. and I was doing Girl as a zine. I think everybody had a zine. Giant Robot.
Yeah.
I think Giant Robot just started as a black and white Xerox zine, and so did Bust magazine. So we were all kind of vying
those
for attention
days.
From like Fact Sheet 5 to get good reviews.
And you were like a celebrity to Carla and I because you – we're like a DJ on Channel 12 in Boulder. Remember?
Oh yeah,
it
was like it wasn't public access, but it was like close, and it was a alternative music show. So technically, I guess I was a VJ, but we played all the videos that MTV wouldn't, and we played like local punk bands like Foreskin 500 and Warlock Pinchers and stuff like that. And then I went to shows and interviewed people. Like Skank and Pickle, and it was a fun time. But it was funny. My first interview was with Shonen Knife, and they didn't know any English at the time, so I had to like I just kept pointing at my Hello Kitty socks, and we just talked about Hello Kitty. I think I don't know. It was fun.
That is awesome. Wow, I would love to see some old tapes of those.
I have them all. I just need to figure out the right tool to get old cranky VHS onto YouTube or whatever video format we're supposed to be using now. Because I guess. Who knows how long YouTube is going to last. So
I bought a converter, and I'm going to try it and write a review. And when I'll send you a link.
Yeah, please do. Cause okay. It's funny. Cause I just put a lot of my videos when I worked for At Home Network, I did a show called Web Waste way before YouTube. It's all in real media, but they're on zip discs. And I had to find, when I was working at Lucasfilm, I put out an all alert email to the ILM guy saying, hey, do you guys have a zip drive? And I got made fun of for 10 years for asking for a zip drive, like the whole time I was at Lucasfilm. But I managed to put some of the old Web Waste videos on YouTube. So if you go to my YouTube channel, you'll see those there.
Cool.
Yeah.
That sounds
good. But
that's
good. That's like early 90s. That would have been like mid 90s, pre-YouTube. Videos. So be kind.
Okay. So Bonnie, you've got some awesome, cool tools to recommend. And one of them is one that my wife Carla has read and loved and has been trying to get me to read, but I just haven't gotten around to it. Tell us.
Yeah. So when you asked me to do this show, I was really nervous because I don't use power tools. And I thought that's what this was about. And I'm not super tech savvy. So I was really elated when you said, oh no, you can choose books or writing tools or websites or apps or whatever. So my first one is the book On Writing by Stephen King. He's mostly well known for his horror books, but he wrote a great memoir about his career and how he struggled as a writer. And I think it's immensely helpful and illuminating to any writer at any skill level because he shares his experiences and his habits and his thoughts all throughout all of the books he wrote, even talks about his childhood where he wrote kind of like an underground zine at his high school and almost got kicked out for it because it's just making fun of teachers and stuff. But it was all the stuff that they wouldn't print in the regular high school newspaper. So he kind of got his start as like underground writer. And then it talks about all of his struggles, but it also is very candid about his alcohol and drug abuse and how his wife really kept him grounded, and how he still struggles with things like writer's block and imposter syndrome and all of that. So for me as a writer, it's, I reread it once a year to remind myself I'm not a hack. Because like, because I mean, and Neil Gaiman has a great speech about imposter syndrome too. And there's a lot of authors that are really, really well known about it. I think Jenny Lawson's a great one that talks about it. But we've all been there. And if you haven't been there, I totally commend you. I think my friend John Scalzi, who's a great writer, said he's never had imposter syndrome. And I'm like, you're a unicorn and amidst a bunch of people like us who are self-loathing Lovecraft creatures, because we all think we're hacks. And so this book is really great. I love it so much. And I think a lot of people can get a lot out of it. And it's been around for a while, so you could probably find it used. I'm sure it's at the library. So if you don't feel like spending money, I'm sure you can find a copy somewhere.
You know, I think the imposter syndrome, just talking about that, one way is to like kind of reframe it and use it as a strength and say, I don't know anything. And I'm like learning how to do this or learning about this and presenting to you what I know from a complete newbie's perspective, which means that I don't assume anything. And you're on the journey with me.
It's not just about writing. It's also about, what do you do after the book is published? Because I'm on my 10th book and every publisher is different. Every marketing plan is different. You're still doing that hustle as an author. You still have to do all your own marketing. And I, you know, I've been doing this for a long time. I've never been invited to the LA Festival of Books. You know, I've never been invited to a, I write mostly young adult nonfiction. I've never been invited to any of those young adult like festivals or workshops. I've never been invited to give like speeches. And I have friends who are writers that have done a lot less that do that whole circuit. And I'm like, wait, am I an imposter? Like it's all that, you know, like NPR hasn't interviewed me. I mean, you guys have, so I feel very elated about that. But you know, there's a certain level of accolades, and it's, and also you have to deal with procrastination, which Stephen King talks about at length. Mm-hmm. I just watched a great documentary on Hulu. I think you can get it anywhere. It's called City of Gold. And it's about the LA food critic, Jonathan Gold, who the late, great Jonathan Gold. And a big portion of that documentary is him just staring at his laptop because he procrastinates a lot, which I can relate to. He avoids his editors a lot, which I can relate to as a journalist. I deal with this a lot. And I hope my editors not listen to this. And it was very enlightening. So it's one, and he's a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist and he's sitting there staring at a blank page. So I totally get that. And I think this book by Stephen King will be a really helpful tool for a lot of writers out there.
That sounds good. Have you read it, Kevin?
No, I haven't, but I do endorse everything you said about the need to be reminded of both how lonely sometimes it is and how underappreciated you may feel while you're doing it. And I think creative people need all the encouragement that you can, because if you're kind of doing anything worthwhile, you are going to have lots of times when you're not connecting, you're not being patted on the back. I mean, that's just sort of the nature of it. Even people as successful as Stephen King are going to have moments where someone tells them that what he's doing is worthless and trash, and it hurts. Even even though he's sold millions of books, when someone says that, it registers. It hurts, and so you have to kind of you have to get through that, and so any kind of encouragement, like a book like his, that is showing that even people that we recognize as professionals and the best still have to deal with these same things that you're dealing with.
Yeah, it's very encouraging. Like it's funny because I think I'm a total slack and a hack for most of my writing career. I've written mostly nonfiction. I don't write a lot of fiction, though I'm delving into that. I've done a few comics. I'm mostly, to pay rent, I'm a journalist first, because that's how I get, you know, money quickly on a regular basis, as opposed to writing books where you never know when your royalties are going to come after an advance. And there's a whole system. And so I just look at other writers as kind of this pinnacle of success. And then I start doing this horrible thing that I think all writers do, all artists do, where we compare ourselves to more successful people. And then we sit there going, why haven't, I'm in my mid 40s. How come I haven't had a documentary made about me? You know, like, I have to die first. Like it's, you know, it's, and I'm sure a lot of artists deal with this. There's you know, I moved from San Francisco to LA last year, and it shocked me how many creative people are in the city. Like I've met more creative writers, comedians, actors, directors as my Lyft drivers. And right. I'm like, but it's also encouraging because they're still pursuing their dream. They haven't given up. Right. Whereas San Francisco felt much more money goals and how can this app make me, you know, the next Elon Musk or Zuckerberg or whatever. In LA, it's everybody's chasing a dream, but everyone's active about it. So there's artists everywhere. There's comedians everywhere. There's writers. It's weird. It's like a very large Algonquin round table with taco food trucks. That's basically LA.
So what's another tool that you're using?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So this is old school. This is as old school as you can get. It's yellow legal pads. And probably people are going to laugh at this, but I do all my writing as far as feature articles and scripts, screenplays, TV writing, as well as all my books. I do all my first drafts and outlines on yellow pads. And the reason I do that, it's just a pen and a pad. You don't have to do yellow pads. I just prefer them because they're long and they're yellow. So they're easier on the eyes if you're writing late at night. And they're cheap. Like you can get them in bulk really cheap. I do it just because I am such an ADHD person. Like I get distracted by everything. And so if I don't have a yellow pad and I'm working on my computer, I guarantee you I'm checking Twitter at least 80,000 times before I get my first paragraph written. And that's a problem. So I know some people just say, turn off your internet, but that's, I can't do that. That's like turning off life support. So I can't turn off my Wi-Fi collection I would be horrified if like the apocalypse hit and I'm just hanging out in my apartment writing.
there is something to the physical thing of moving your hand across the page. Maybe it slows you down sometimes or you're kind of making it kinetic, but I have my challenge is that I cannot read my own handwriting.
Uh-oh.
You must have really good handwriting.
I don't write cursive. It's funny. I found my old report cards at my parents' house over the holidays, and it all said that I was very good, had very good handwriting. But I never used cursive. I don't even think they teach cursive anymore in schools because everyone's typing. But my writing's pretty legible. I don't have doctor script. Like I don't have that weird schizophrenic signature. So I can read my own writing. The problem I have is I just lose yellow pads everywhere. So I'll be like reorganizing my books. I have a giant to read pile. And then all of a sudden there's, you know, 10 old Entertainment Weeklies, a couple of New Yorkers and 5 yellow pads that I'd had like 8 months ago. So I have to remind myself to put them in prominent places and not under books, because under books is like the best way to accidentally hide your life. I think on every to-do list I have, it's find previous to-do lists is one of the items. So I do have, luckily I live in a small apartment. So the chances of me finding the yellow pads are pretty good. But I think for me specifically as a writer, it's just good because it slows me down a bit. I don't get distracted. I don't zone out. I notice when I type, sometimes I zone out. When I write, handwrite, I don't have that problem. But also I can go back to these journals where sometimes when you switch out laptops or, you know, even though if things are in the cloud, they're not where you think they are, or things get deleted or you don't have the right drafts, where when you write something down physically, that's not going anywhere unless you physically put it in the trash can. So like a real trash can. So when it's not virtual, I find that I can find old stuff. Like I found scripts from college that I'm reworking now as original screenplays that I would have probably, that would have been, if it was in college, it would have been on a Mac Classic. I mean, I don't, or a floppy disk or something. Like I probably wouldn't even be able to retrieve it. So at least on a yellow paddock. It's, you know, old enough technology that you can find it again. You don't need some sort of software to reconfigure it to
read it. No zip drive needed.
No zip drive needed. You just need a nice bookcase that you could just stash them all in. And also, I wanted to note, George Lucas wrote all of his scripts on yellow pads.
There wasn't much choice back then.
Well, he had a typewriter. He could have typewritten. He doesn't use a he's the biggest Luddite I know. He doesn't use a typewriter. And his handwriting's horrible. So he's his own enigma for sure. But I kind of feel like if it's good enough for George Lucas, it's good enough for me. So
yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So what's another you have another writing tool that you wanted to suggest?
I do. It's called rainycafe.com. And what it is a website. When you go to it, all it is it plays ambient cafe noises, like the clinking of mugs, espresso machine noises, and just the kind of conversations, like the hushed conversations you would hear in a coffee house. And then it also has the option to have the sound of rain. So if you like the sound of rain, which is funny because Guillermo del Toro has a writing room in his Bleak House office museum, that it's just a room where it looks and sounds like it's raining outside, even though it's not. And he has it all set up to be fake rain sounds hitting the pane. Cause that's how that helps him write. That helps for whatever reason. That's his like litmus to, you know, what's interesting. A lot of people say water, the sound of water or being in water really helps creativity. I think I get a lot of my great ideas, or I think they're great, in the tub when I'm in the bathtub, and I can't bring in the yellow pad cause that'll get soaked. So I have those kids' crayons that you can write on the wall and wash off, and I write down ideas. But you just have to remember to wipe that off, or else when your friends come over and they use the bathroom, they're going to think it's like Beautiful Mind in your shower. Because it's like all these, and don't use red because then it looks like blood, and that's a cry for help. But anyway, I digress. Rainycafe.com. It's a free website. You can run it on any browser in the background if you are typing on your computer. I have it on my computer while I'm writing on my yellow pad. So it's like I'm doing the best of both worlds.
So you have the rainy background in the cafe. You have both.
Yeah.
The rain in the cafe.
Yeah, I have both. I like the idea that I'm writing in Seattle instead of blistering hot weather in LA. And also the problem too is here's the thing with LA cafes, everyone is in them. So a lot of times they're overcrowded. So if you just want the ambiance of that and you want to save money on coffee, just do it at home. And this is a great example of that. Also the rain, if you just have the rain on and not the cafe ambient noises, it's a great relaxation meditation tool as well. So if you need some sort of sound that's white noise, but not just that buzz, but like the sound of nature, it's great for meditation.
Have you ever tried just playing a single track on an endless loop?
You know what? Sometimes I go on YouTube.com. And I don't know why I said .com. That was old school. http://. Sometimes I go to YouTube, and my favorite 10-hour loop is Blade Runner Deckard Apartment Sounds, as well as USS Enterprise Warp Engine.
I know this web channel. The YouTube.com channel.
Yeah. So it is 10 hours. I used to like hang out in the bathtub and just listen to like, just kind of relax at the end of the day, listening to the warp port, like the warp drive on the USS Enterprise. And what I found out, eerily enough, that same ambient sound is the exact same sound of the medical bay in Alien.
Oh, interesting.
And I didn't know that. And I was like, wow, that's crazy.
Oh, they're cheating.
They're cheating. I mean, it would be weird if I just listened to like 10 hours of various Wilhelm screams or something
from
movies, which is what everybody uses in movies when someone falls off a cliff. It's that well-known scream from that Western that it's like a little note of honor that sound designers use. But you can find a lot of stuff on YouTube if you just look 10 hours of and if you go to the 10 hours of Blade Runner sounds, you'll see all the suggestions on like the right hand side or left hand side or wherever they put suggestions now for videos. And you can see all the other 10 hours of ambient music. Like there's 10 hours of jungle sounds, 10 hours of whatever. So
I think there was 10 hours of like a Blue Planet soundtrack.
Yeah. Yeah. Or Thunderbird sound effects. Or I mean, there's lots of things that are just sound effects. I mean, I love sound effects albums, and I love any kind of like Suzanne Chianti, the groundbreaking legendary sound designer and electronic music composer. She did like sounds like that were like the sounds of the pouring a Coca-Cola, you know, like that, or the drippy sounds of the rain, but it's electronica. Like, it's kind of like new age stuff. And I know everyone makes fun of that, but I love new age music. So I'll listen to that. But I really do like rainycafe.com, and it's free. So if you're just stressed out, go there and like mess around, toggle. You can also mess around with the toggle. So you can have, you know, super loud rain and really quiet cafe noises, or really loud cafe noises and super quiet rain. I mean, you can kind of mess
with it. Really, it's cool. Fun.
You should definitely have a toggle for the corrugated tin roof rain.
Yeah, version. They really should. Or the someone screaming in the cafe after they lost their screenplay in their computer. That's a Wilhelm exactly. scream. That's definitely a Wilhelm scream.
That's good. Yeah. Well, thank you for that, Bonnie. I'm going to try that out. And then you have, yes. Speaking of of moisture, you've got another tool.
Good segue. So this is an actual tool that has nothing to do with writing. I have a zillion houseplants, and I constantly kill them. So if you're like me, there's a tool called a soil moisture meter. They're usually under $10. You can get them at plant stores, grocery stores, hardware stores, Amazon, wherever you like to shop. I work from home, so I like to have houseplants all around me because it gives me a sense of calmness. It also provides extra fresh air when I'm hyperventilating over a deadline. It's always good to stare at your succulents and ferns and spider plants when you start panicking. I also talk to them a lot. I realize this is starting to sound like a cry for help, but it's really not. It's very good for them to hear noise. It's good to have vibration. So they put it on top of your stereo. Or
have you tried turning the Rainy Cafe on for them?
You know, they don't. I feel like that's kind of rude to them because they're probably expecting rain and there's no rain and I can't water them. Yeah, but I do realize when I'm procrastinating, I tend to overwater them even more. So what this does is it's a moisture meter. It's super simple looking. It's just like a metal rod with like a detector on the top that says the soil is either, you know, dry, normal, or super wet. And it's great because you can poke it in the soil and you don't have to use the finger test because usually they say just poke your finger in soil and you can tell. Yeah, that doesn't work. I've killed so many plants doing that. So at least this goes all the way down so you know if there's too much water at the base of your plant, or if there's not enough, like if you're a light waterer or if you soak too much. And all plants have different requirements, so it's good to just Google your plant name to research what watering they need first before you do all this. But it's a great tool, and it's a great procrastination tool, and you feel like you're doing something productive when you go and measure over 30 plants in one sitting with your little soil moisture meter. So
do you have a preference of the model or make?
No, they're all the same. You don't have to get anything high tech. They don't run on batteries. They're not electronic. You don't have to get some Tesla version. They're super cheap and they've been used since like the 70s. I mean, it's not anything that you need to charge. There's no USB thing. Like it's probably the most like low rent tool you can get, but it's very useful. And I love mine. I've had mine for about 14 years and they don't break. I mean, it's probably one of the few things I have that I haven't broken by accident. So, cause I'm not really a gadget nut, but when it comes to plant stuff, I like anything that's going to prevent me from killing plants. And that's a good one. So, though I just did write an article for CNET about MIT just did a new robot base that you can put your plant on and it moves your plant to light. So if you're not in your apartment, it moves all your plants around. But I feel like that could be slightly Day of the Triffids for me. Like that, I feel like I could wake up in the middle of the morning and then all my plants are surrounding me glaring. So I don't know if I want the plants to have any robot friends. I feel like that could be the beginning of the end for us.
Yeah,
but
we're kind of cyborg plant robot cyborg.
Yeah, it would be kind of like Terminator meets The Happening. I just don't want I don't know if I want the plants and the robots to start teaming up, because I feel like we would be the first one on the docket to get rid of. So I mean, and understandably I would. If I was a plant and I could kill a bunch of humans, I would totally do it. So I don't know why I went down this dark path on this podcast, but in conclusion, the soil moisture meter is very handy.
I love it.
And you don't leave it in it.
No, it's like you can tell right away. The little arrow says whether it's dry, normal, or too wet automatically. And then you just pull it out. That's fine.
I love the warning. I'm looking at one here on Amazon and it said, warning, do not use to test water.
I love that. It's kind of like I love warning labels on things because you know that it's there because a lawsuit happened. So like my favorite ones on hair dryers that are like, do not operate while sitting in bathtub. Yeah. It's like, oh, somebody tried that. Like there's just always, somebody's doing a Rube Goldberg morning routine and they right. probably try to do too many things at once. But I like those type of warnings where it's like, oh, come on.
you almost want to go back and research the case.
Yeah.
That brought that because there was a story there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's covered by the yearly Darwin Death Awards. but that's, you're giving me a good idea for a book though. I feel like that would be kind of mean because people probably did die. I don't want to be disrespectful to families who had people that just weren't reading the warning label, but maybe I could do like, guy in Milwaukee tries to dry his hair while taking a bath using the hair dryer. Like maybe I could do something like that. But yeah, those are always riveting to me. It's like, all the mattress tag labels when you're like, do not remove under penalty of law. And I'm like, everybody removes those. Everyone removes the pillow tags. Like no one removes the tags. So
yeah, for a long time I didn't because I thought it was illegal.
And like I love that there's an idea of like a whole branch of the FBI or CIA or police that go after people that rip off mattress tags. Like where's that Law and Order series? I would totally watch that.
Yeah,
Law and Order tag police.
Yeah, that would be a great series.
That'd be great. Something. I feel like we're missing that. Like I kind of miss CSI Cyber because they were so wrong on everything. As a tech reporter, it was fun to watch and go, that's quit saying dark web. Like that cracks me up every time people are like, oh, I'll just go on the dark web and find an assassin. Or Numbers was always my favorite show because the guy in every episode was like, I'll just go ahead and program an algorithm. It's like, you do know algorithms can't do everything. So... but right. I love those shows, so maybe there is room for Law and Order mattress tag police.
so Bonnie,
there should be a Law and Order plant killers. I feel like that would be awesome. For all of us, really.
Yeah, I love the idea of
plants plant genocide.
Working with robots to make them mobile like that so they can act out there.
Yeah, that's how we're gonna end. I mean I'm pretty convinced it's going to be a plant robot team up against us, or all the GPSs in all of our cars and Lyft and Uber will just make us all go off the cliff in self-driving cars. Like, I just feel like all the self-driving cars will team up and we'll just all be shoved into the Grand Canyon.
Pull out your yellow pad. I think you have a novel in the works.
See, this is why I don't get a lot of fiction published.
So tell us about your new book that comes out later this year.
Oh yeah. So it's a book called Live or Die Survival Hacks. And I have to say that slowly or else it sounds like live or die. So it sounds like an alcoholic book. It's a book for kids. It's a nonfiction young adult book. It's more middle grade than young adult. And what I do is it's a book that explains how to find water and food, start a fire without matches, how to build shelters, but all in different terrains. So and all using stuff in your backpack. So it's kind of like Mythbusters Jr. meets MacGyver. And it's supposed to teach kids like how you can, there's alternative uses for, Coke cans and comic book paper and your eyeglasses and, things that you would normally have in a backpack or a school bag. If somehow you got abandoned in the Arctic or a forest. I mean, this is also very... It feels like an Edward Gorey story in a way, because it's like these children just being dropped off in horrible terrains and fend for yourself. So it's kind of like a survival book in that sense. Hopefully kids will not be separated from their tour group in the jungle or the rainforest. Hopefully they won't go on a hike with their parents in the mountains and then, or the forests, and are left Hansel and Gretel style. Like, I'm hoping that doesn't happen to children, but for whatever reason, kids really love survival books. And I think I remember really memorizing all the 4-H books, campfire books, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, all of that survival stuff way before it was like hipster prep stuff, hipster prepper stuff. Now it's everywhere. And for to research this book, I already have a ton of those books. So I have a lot of vintage survival books, but I also have new ones. I'm obsessed with prepper videos. So I watch a lot of those on YouTube, which are kind of scary in a way, because a lot of them are like how to make deadly booby traps around your house and, you know, how to kill any animal and eat it and skin it and then hang it on your wall. Like, there's a lot of, you know, kind of scary prepper stuff, but, you know, learning how to start a fire without matches, learning how to make nature water drinkable, learning what food you can and cannot eat when you're foraging, I think is essential for all of us to learn, especially when we don't know what's going to happen in the next 20 to 30 years, where there could be like a war, there could be a tech drop where all tech goes away and we have to sort of fend for ourselves. I mean, I hope that's not the future, but if you're a big like apocalyptic zombie fan, you know these things are important. Even when you watch movies about World War II, they were doing victory gardens in Europe. You know, they learned how to live within their means. During the Great Depression, you learned how to save money by reusing things for other activities. And so I think that's a skill that a lot of kids don't know anymore, because we're so tech dependent that we forgot. Unless you're really into camping, you probably don't know all this stuff. And I learned a lot about how to make lake water, seawater, pond water, all that stuff drinkable. I learned what fish do not eat at all. Like, you should not eat them because they're poisonous. I was already a big mushroom fan, so I know what mushrooms to eat and what not to eat. I left that out of the book because there's too many lookalike mushrooms, so I don't want anyone dying.
Yeah,
I mean, I did put at the beginning of the book, which I think legally you have to, that this is for entertainment purposes only. Please do not abandon your child with this book. You know, like, don't sure. test it. Kind of like the Bird Box challenge. You know, it's like, don't blindfold yourself and go river rafting. Like, maybe just know that's fiction. But this isn't fiction. This actually are useful tips. And I did test them all. So the cool thing is the book comes with supplies to make a compass. The bad thing is that it's a high-powered magnet, so just don't put your phone near the book. Yeah, I'm wondering how many parents are going to throw that book in a book bag with their phone, and then I'm going to get some letters, I'm sure.
You know, I don't think you have to worry too much about magnets and phones. I use a magnetic car mount, and I've never had a problem with that.
Oh, good. Thing. Okay. I didn't know if that was – okay. That's how much I don't know about phones. I didn't know if that was still a thing. But yeah, there's some really fun stuff in the book, and hopefully people, I learned a lot from it, just from how to build a shelter, how to build a proper igloo, how to protect yourself in the rainforest from ants and bugs. And it was very entertaining. I just know that the whole time I was writing that book, I had some pretty creepy dreams. So I wouldn't recommend trying to write a survival book in a couple of months. Like, maybe sparse it out a bit so you're not constantly thinking about it. But it was a really fun book to write. And I've been wanting to write more science books because I mostly write franchise books for Star Wars and Harry Potter. And then I do a lot of young adult nonfiction about anti-bullying and feminism and that sort of thing. So it was fun to do. It's fun to pretend to be Adam Savage for a while and do a Mythbusters type book. So I'm very proud of it. It comes out this year specifically in Scholastic book fairs around the country. So if your kid has one of those at their school, or if you have a niece or nephew, that's where you can buy it first. And I think they have an app, a Scholastic book fair app, where you can order it. And then in 2020, it should be available at Amazon and other bookstores, wherever you like to get your books. Hopefully before then it'll be in the library so you can get it at the library. But yeah, I'm really excited for it.
It sounds so much fun. I remember when I was about 12 years old, I bought a book called The Survival Book.
Ooh.
I think it was like an army guy, Paul Nesbitt was the lead author on it.
Okay. And, so now I want it to be written by Michael Nesbitt of the Monkees.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I feel like that would even be better.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
So yeah, it says here's the author is the chief of the Arctic Desert Tropic Information Center and professor of anthropology.
Ooh.
But it doesn't say where.
He's like an Indiana Jones of survival. Yeah.
That's how I felt. It was really interesting about like how to survive if you were basically like dropped into any kind of condition.
Yeah.
What you could do. It was a fascinating book.
And also it's like I had things in there where I didn't realize you can make snowshoes out of certain things, and also you know, when to step on ice, when not to step on ice. It was a very useful information, I think, for all kids and adults. We'll get a lot out of it. But yeah, it's one of those situations too where whenever you write a survival book, you just need to make sure everything actually works. So I tested out. I didn't test the ice thing out because I didn't want to die if I was wrong, but I did test out the drinking water thing and the fires. So now I can build fires anywhere. I'm pretty excited about that. Like, I think my niece and nephews are going to be excited that I can do that. I just need to not teach. I need to also teach them not to just light random things on fire. But no, it was a fun book to write, and I'm very proud of it. So I hope people will like it. But it's also, when you're a writer, it's great because you get to learn new things and learn how to use new tools and learn how to survive. So I think that's important. Not just making your plants live, but it's important that you live too.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, Bonnie. It sounds good.
I'll send you guys a copy.
Sounds fantastic. Yeah.
Excellent.
Well, thank you.
Bonnie, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us and telling us about all the tools and what you're up to and stuff. You're always an interesting and very entertaining person. And I'm really happy that we've known each other for such a long time.
Yeah, thank you. And I was so excited to see you on the JoCo cruise. So I'm glad we could reconnect because I hadn't seen you in forever. So it was fun to like, maybe I'll do my next book is How to Survive a Cruise if You're a Kid or something.
That sounds good.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, cool, Bonnie.